I'm playing with hair.
Kelly's playing with hair.
You're interrupting me.
And we're going to talk about fishing.
Fishing.
Welcome back to episode 21 of the Slide In Podcast.
Coolest hair.
Braden Anderson. This is Kelly Galt. That's Josh Varner.
New dye cuts or dye styles of Varner hair. Guy's a genius.
What was your, you had a good Varner quote the other day. It's like, if you're not tying with Varner's hair, you're not tying at all.
That wasn't me.
Something like that.
Well, it'd be close. I mean, his hair has just become so spectacular. But this is a dye job. I love doing hair bodies, dry flies, in particular mayflies. And this new, and this is all done on mid-season doe deer hair, because he's isolated the difference between does and bucks for taking dye. Pretty amazing. And so he's been doing me dye colors for drakes and different things. Green drakes, brown drakes, flabs, all that stuff. So I'm kind of giddy. But unfortunately, still can't tie for more than... I was supposed to get my MRI yesterday, and they scheduled me wrong.
Oh.
So I still can only tie for about 8 minutes before I...
That's a plenty of time. That's a long time, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, by some standards. Like,
yeah, I could probably get like 3 eggs done. So, what are we talking about today?
So, we've got a number of things to discuss. We filmed some segments on the last one. I don't know. They felt a little uncomfortable to me.
Which one?
Whatever, the minute to answer questions and all that stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah, that thing.
We won't know if people like them until after it goes out.
I don't know if we have to do like five of them.
Yeah, we can do a couple.
Pushed on it.
One or two. We'll find our kind of happy.
We did get to talk about.
Let us know what you think, or if there's any other segments you want to see us do. Like I mentioned in the last one, like, subscribe, follow, heart. What are the other ones? Buy stuff.
Heart. What's heart mean?
Throw, you know, the heart. Oh, like, geez. Whatever.
I thought that's people what chicks dig.
Yeah, I don't know.
I get those from Mel. I don't want one from you.
Okay. It was really, this is a random memory, but when we were down in Chile, every day at lunch on the beach, you'd draw a little heart, send it to Mel. It's cute. Kelly's got a heart.
No,
he doesn't want
heart,
anybody to know
I would
it.
Find her a heart rock.
Yeah, that too.
And put K plus G on it.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
Got to keep your...
Rah, rah. Okay, today we're going to start with a question.
I want to see it. I have pictures. No.
At some point, we're going to have to get into some chili stories, too, because there's some fun stuff that happened down there.
That's probably why my shoulder doesn't work. Probably that headshot falling off.
Doesn't work.
Coming off that porch.
Yeah. We'll get into that later. Okay, so I want to start with a question from Aiden Anders.
Would have killed the average man.
I thought you broke your neck. I was sure of it. It looked like that rock looked like Reggie Bush getting hit by a linebacker. Okay, Aiden Anders on YouTube asked a question. He said, I'm 16 and new to fly fishing. I fish a very fast moving river that feeds into a large inland lake in northern Michigan. I'm sure Kelly has a pretty good idea of which one I'm referring to. I feel like when I'm throwing streamers, I don't have much control over the fly. By the time I do, the fly is downstream of me. I'm currently using a sink tip line. Should I switch to a floating line? So thanks for the question, Aiden. We talked a little bit about floating versus sinking lines in the last show. So I wanted to get deeper into that today. And from his question, I think we can assume that he's fishing streamers upstream, right? He said,
maybe.
I'm throwing streamers. I don't have a lot of control. By the time I do, the fly's downstream.
I think he's throwing crossed or downstream and getting just hooked out. Where did he say he was? Northern Michigan?
Northern Michigan on very fast river. So it sounds like the Madison, more or less.
Well, there's nothing that big up there. But you said it went into the river? Into the lake?
Into an inland lake.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is pretty quick. Not very wide, though. Well, there's three of them that it could be, I think. But I'm guessing he probably is going cross stream. So that in and of itself, when you first start, you know, it's going to catch your fly and swing it. So what did he say was, he kind of got caught up thinking about the river. So what did he?
So he said, I'm 16, new to fly fishing. I fish very fast moving river that feeds into a large inland lake in northern Michigan, blah, 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 blah. I feel like when I'm throwing streamers, I don't have much control over the fly. And by the time I do, the fly is downstream of me.
Okay. Well, first of all, that's just part and parcel of walk fishing.
Yeah. I mean, that's just fishing fast water.
Yeah. Fast water is fast water. And so the inland, I'm just trying to think where he's at without naming his river, but there's several that are pretty fast coming into the lake up there. It's up the chains. But I mean, that's just part of the game. If you're on the bank and you are not going to, you know, you're not moving with the current, so you're going to have issues no matter what. So, and it wouldn't matter. Actually, if you're on a sinking line, it would be probably better. Floating line's going to be in the surface, so it's going to get caught even quicker and kind of dragged, whereas a sinking line's kind of sinking through it, heavier, thinner, not being pushed by the currents as much. So you're coming cross stream. It's going to fight you no matter what. It's going to fight you. You're going to have but of all the rivers that I can think of, very few are, you know, if you could get out, you should be able to get out a ways, and most of them, you should be able to get pretty close to the middle, fish back, and that'll help a little bit. But if you're on the bank and you're throwing it out or real close to the bank, you really got to dissect your water, first of all, and find the softer water, because they're probably not going to be hanging in that super fast water anyway. So floating versus the only thing I would say is that, I mean, I don't want to pop off and say one of the three or four rivers I'm guessing you're in, because two of them I fished most of my life I don't think I saw five people in my life. And I wouldn't want to blow it and say this river. I mean, there's so many people back there that when you've got some of those rivers, and they're kind of hard to get in and out of, and so, but they're smaller. And so the disadvantage, if you're going cross stream in a river that's at any, I'm just trying to think of one that isn't like a secret. The Pier Marquette. I mean, the speed of the Pier Marquette, which is not a real fast river. You know, if you're on the bank, it's going to be hard for you to get a cross stream cast. I mean, you got trees and all that stuff. If you can get out and fish back to the bank, what you have to remember is you're only trying to fish a really small section of water. You're going to learn the water that holds the fish and get a cast. You know, if it's 15 feet long, you need to make three casts through it to cover most of the water. And you're going to learn where, you know, the ascent is at the end of the bucket, or, you know, the whatever the water quality is where you're most likely to get your fish. And realize that you start, as soon as the fly hits the water, you start your retrieve. But don't be afraid if your line, I encourage it actually to have my line get caught by the current and pull the fly, because it's, so I'm looking at the bank straight across and I'm you, I try to throw the line at a little bit of an angle like this, so immediately the water pushes the middle of the line and pulls the fly back with its head.
Downstream belly.
Yeah,
right?
It's chasing the belly of the line, regardless if it's sinking or floating. And then you need to start that retrieve pretty quickly. You know, like the second the fly hits the water, make it move. And then you're only going to retrieve, in any of the rivers that I can think of that you're on, you're not going to get more than a 10, 15 foot retrieve at best, but that'll cover it. And then you go to the next and just drop down 15 or 5 feet, you know, whatever it is. You've already covered, you don't just cover the track of the line. You know, the fly comes back to you, but you don't just cover that line. You cover 3 to 5 feet on both sides in a circumference of that fly. So it's coming back and it's telegraphing itself down to the bottom and all over to the fish. They can feel it, see it, hear it. And, you know, it's going through there. So you don't have to sit and belabor that thing over and over and over and over. It'll move or it won't. You know, if you want to make one or two casts, three's pretty redundant on the third one, and then move down 5 feet, right? And so you'll move it. And so that will cover all of your water. But what most people do when they first start is they throw the fly out there and they kind of get, they dilly-dally. They just sit there too long. And then it gets, it's over here. And water that's so fast that doesn't give you time to hit the fly, retrieve two or three times, and it's already bumped below you, probably worthless for holding water anyway. Mm-hmm. But if it's that fast, but it's more likely that you're throwing and delaying when the fly hits the water, you're not immediately starting your retrieve. You may be waiting for something to sink, or did he say if he's using floating line?
That's his question is, he's using sinking, and he's asking if he can switch to floater.
Now, floating will be worse. Floating, the surface current's always faster than the mid currents, and the sinking line's going through the water, right? It's heavier. It's not going to get pulled as quick as the floating line would be. If you wanted to, and a lot of those rivers back there, I mean, I miss some of the rivers that I would fish, the Jordan, for example, the Pigeon, the Maple, any of those on that side, the Sturgeon, just the Black, a lot of those really are really good upstream rivers. They're really good, and very few people do that, in which case I'm full on floater. At that point, I'm floating lines mostly. Just your retrieves, again, you're going to have, now you're going upstream with your cast, and you could still use your sinker. I mean, in a lot of those rivers, like I would be, what I used to do is I would float those rivers, get out, and work a section like we do, you know, here, where we just jump out and we all take a piece of water. And so I wouldn't switch to my kind of some of the things that make me go from a floater to a sinker here. I pretty much run sinkers because it's real, or I mean floaters, because the water's so fast and it's, you're fishing so close to shore. Mm-hmm. You don't have, you can fish out there in the middle, but you got to really, as soon as it hits, you got to come. And so I, right back at you, you've got to start immediately. And the thing I don't like about a sinking line when I'm doing that is it's at my feet and it goes in the water and you step on it. And this river, you're wearing some sort of, you run a stud of some sort.
Except for me yesterday.
Yeah, well, people.
Not everybody's as dumb as I am.
Rubber in this river, or even just flat felt, is you're going down. You're going down. But if you are wearing that, it's not as big a deal. But the big thing is that line, you're dumping the line, you know, you're casting, you're retrieving, whatever you're doing, and you're dumping line, and it's going down in very shallow water, but it's around your feet. And I think that's a pain in the ass. Floating line goes behind you. When you fish upstream, you seldom, I've talked about this 100 times. I think I got videos just about it. But how I fish upstream is I will pick, you know, I'm a big fan of inside bends, 3 to 5 feet off an inside bend. You got to look at it. And a lot of those rivers, though, are pretty straight up there because they're getting closer to the lakes. And they tend to straighten out a little bit, not all of them. But so I'm going to fish upstream, and I'm going to go 10 inches or a foot from the bank, and then I'm going to move out on the next cast 3 feet and retrieve that, and then go out 3 more feet, do it again, and then I look for targets out away from me. But if you're just walking down the river, and you're, you know, most of the rivers back there, I would have no problem with a sinking line all the time. Mm-hmm. None whatsoever. Lots of sand, not a lot of rock that you can dump your, you know, step on your line and cut your line in half, which happens. That sounds like it happens a lot. If you're wade fishing and you run out here, if you run, I like, you know, studs or the rock bars, you know, across, you step on a line on a rock, it cuts it, right? You can feel it. Cuts right under your foot. It's like, ah, shit. And to be the world's greatest cast.
Well, I broke off like 40 feet of running line ahead, a tip, mm-hmm. and about a 22-inch brown trout because I know I stepped on my running line. It was the worst. I hook up this thing in the middle and just ping.
You make that cast and you've got, and your line's broke and you will shoot a 100-footer every time.
It'll go.
And it's like, oh, dang, that's a lot of money. But back to your question, it's a really tough one because I think it's more just you getting used to the, you're probably waiting just a minute too long, right? Just a second, I should say. So you deliver that fly and you get its angle slightly, let the current work the fly down, head coming kind of not straight downstream necessarily, but coming around. And then you can work that chung, 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 you know, just making it move your fly. And remember, you don't have to, you only need 10, 15 foot of water. I can't think of a river up. I truly can't until you get up to the Sioux. I can't think of a river above Traverse City, at least, that's more than 40 feet wide where you'd be fishing it. And so that means you're looking at about a 10, 15 foot retrieve.
Right.
I mean, shit, on some of the Boardman, which, you know, I grew up on the Boardman fishing it virtually daily. And 6 feet's about it. You know, that's pretty much where it ends. And it wouldn't really matter if I was fishing sinking or let me just go backwards for 1 second. The real reason we fish the sinking lines isn't to sink the fly. It is to carry the fly. It is so much easier to roll it up, pick it up, and go with a sinking line. But if you're talking a 5, 6, 10 foot retrieve, I don't care if you got a T10,000 on. There's no such thing. If you've got a 300 grain head, it's not going to go down hardly at all once you start retrieving.
Especially if you're using your rod.
Yeah.
Right.
Even if you're doing this, it's still right. You might get a foot
strips.
Down.
Yeah.
And as opposed to a floater with a longer leader, you're not really going to gain much. And so, in those tighter rivers, it's not that big an advantage one way or the other. If you're using if you're using like a streamer, we'll talk about that in a little bit. If you're using like a streamer float, it'll have enough head weight to flip your flies over and then you, boom. But the original thing about the cast and the retrieve, the sinking line is made to carry a bigger fly. It's really what it's carrying, or a heavier fly. Like a week or two ago, we talked about the butt monkey. And this was a big fly back in the day. And it's all bunny and wool, and it's heavy.
That's right? A heavy bug.
It's a heavy bug.
Yeah.
And so to take a 200 grain, which is about what you would use in most of those rivers on a sinking, and just, it'll pick it up and deliver it very easily. Mm-hmm. And so, but I would encourage you to see, in particular back there, I was just back in Michigan 2-3 weeks ago, and I drove to all, I was showing Mel all the old haunts of the world back there. And I mean, I've fished them for 40 years, and I was amazed how small they are. I mean, you get out here and you're used to everything being really huge and fast and a lot of gradient. And I was thinking of a summit, and I watched Alex and Russ do a video on the PM, and it just took me back to how skinny the water was, how narrow, you know, two boats, it's kind of hard to get past the third boat, right? Where we can go sideways with five of them. And so our rivers are a little more like the Big Manistee Low or the Muskegon or something like that. And so back there, but it wouldn't be a real huge advantage one way or the other for the size of the rivers for you to do either one. The speed's probably, I really think that's probably just getting used to the cast, right, hitting and moving. But a lot of those rivers, like especially on foot, right? You could run a floater with some sort of weighted, like a cone head or a Carolina rig, if you want to put a swivel in a floaty fly, which is really effective back there. You'd do well with that, but you'd be upstream, more upstream instead of all going walking down the current. So you'd be hitting those runs before, and then you get a cross stream to them. You just do the same thing as you're doing now. I assume you're walking downstream. I don't know why. That's just, maybe he's not. But what's his name?
I read it as he's fishing upstream.
What's his name?
Aiden.
If he's fishing upstream, man, I'm not sure. You might be going too straight upstream, maybe.
So my thought is he might be throwing it too far. I was just up between the lakes with Chuck yesterday, and we brought cameras out and films. We got a bunch of eats on camera, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I was throwing a floating line, and at the beginning, I was casting too far. And that was maybe 20 feet. Mm-hmm. But with a floating line, the water was about 37 degrees, so it's cold. I quickly figured out, not that quickly, I figured out eventually that they wanted the fly really low and really slow. And I think that would have been hard to do with the sinking line, because you break through that current and then mm-hmm. you have to keep that fly moving. I mean, you know, between the lakes, it's very fast. I was fishing up to the dam. So what I did is I shortened up, I reeled in a bunch, made only a 10 to, you know, maybe 14 foot cast. Mm-hmm. And then I was almost euro-nymphing it downstream. And I think that, you know, when you're able to lift some line off the water, you can slow that fly down because the fly is now sunk down to where there's current.
It's dredging.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
I mean, in the old days.
And I'm only fishing water. It's a foot and a half, two feet deep. But
I think
I felt like I was able to slow it down and have better control over that streamer.
I think you might be right on the distance. It's just, it's tight there. You know, it's tight water, which tells me, If you do cast too far, that's not good because the wheels fall up. I mean, when we do our upstream presentation thing, we did a video or something about it. And, you know, basically 30 foot is a long cast, and that's an open area like this.
Right.
20 is more what I would say I do. And then I only try to keep control of about 8 foot of the retrieve. Now, you're a dredging. That's a little different, keeping your fly close to bottom for cold water stuff and just keeping in contact, which is hard no matter what. It doesn't matter what kind of line it is. Regardless, you're not fishing very deep. And I can't think of anywhere there that you would be fishing. There's a couple spots on the Jordan where there's some deeper holes, but for the most part, it's just where the fish hold, it's just not that deep. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe Braden might be right on that, where you may be casting too far. So just remember when we went back that the run is the run, and there's no run up there that's going to take more than 3 casts to identify the bucket or wherever the fish is holding. And so rather you use a floater or a sinker, it's, you know, your fly is not going to be more than 2 foot deep. I wouldn't guess, very few places. So just get used to throwing. Dissect your water. We never stop talking about this, reading your water, because that's what most people do wrong, or that stops them catching fish. They kind of get this idea that all water's the same, and it is not all the same. And the holding buckets, like we always say, it doesn't matter where it is in the river, side, bank, middle. You'll have to learn those just by seeing success, having a fish come out of them. But it doesn't take 20 casts to cover it. It's going to take 1, 2, or 3 casts, and you'll walk a 15-foot section out short. And you can get so much closer than people think they can on these fish. I mean, some of the creeks we fish, I mean, they're 8-10 feet from you max, and they just come a-running, right? So more control on less line, and get control of, I would say, practice having control over 6 feet of your retrieve. That's it.
Yeah.
No more, period. And once you really got control over it, meaning it's like watching a tennis match. It looks like they're moving really fast, but they're not, right? They're really good at it. Or watching somebody in boxing or something. There's not a lot of movement, right? Most people, when they first start, they kind of panic and they get going. So if you can just get out there and remember, I only need control from the second it hits, the length of this table is all you need to have control over. And then position yourself to get more angles to the same water. And if it takes you 3 casts and you say, well, maybe if I move over here, I think you'll suddenly find that when you stop And another really big mistake is trying to get too long of a retrieve. That's probably what I see out here most, because they never really do get control of the fly. They just throw it out, and they're stripping like hell, trying to catch control because it's already out of control from when it hits, because they're not composed and ready to go. So,
like, that fly may be moving, but it's not intentional movement.
Yeah, right? Not really. It's not you moving it. It's moving. And now what you were talking about is a little different, because you're just kind of keeping contact and letting it.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing a lot of little swim, dive. Yeah. And I mean, I am swimming that fly along. I may end up making a video for our channel. I might make my own.
You're keeping contact.
But our Instagram or something, I'll put up some of those eats. They all came within probably 15 feet of me, maybe.
Or less.
And a lot of them were within like 8 feet of my feet.
Yeah, no.
I mean, that brown trout came and eat it. You know, I retrieved it maybe 8 feet, and then I kind of just swim it at the end before I'm going to pick it up, and it came and just ate it right at my feet.
Yeah.
And then I did maybe.
And that was kind of what I was trying to get at a little bit, is that they'll sit so much. I'll never forget that the day we were up there with Fly Lords, and the guys are crossing the river, and we are in 10 inches of water, and we're throwing 15 feet at best, maybe 10. And that giant fish guy just walked through it, not 30 seconds. And we're not 10 feet from it. And he just comes up and, oh, look at that. Something just got to be eaten. And so they'll let you do that. But I just summarize the whole thing. I would say shorten up. No more than a 15-foot cast if you can help it. You know, if you can get, position yourself more, stalk more, cast less. Control of 6 feet of your line. Don't think it really matters, sinking or floating. A lot of that stuff back there, I used to, I would run floaters in there because it was when I was in a boat, I almost always ran a sinking line. But walking, like the Maple or something like that, I used to have a shop in Petoskey, and I would walk there, and I ran a floating line, and I ran cone heads. I didn't really even do that many bead eye, you know, like lead eyes. I just ran mostly cone head and mostly woolly sculpin. Mm-hmm. I mean, cone head, woolly sculpin, white, black, and tan, and olive. Shit, I think I could be happy forever with the four colors of flies. And for that matter, white and black would probably cover a lot of it. But in that particular river, and in the Assabalon also, that tan conehead woolly sculpin, that's one section of that river. I basically never fished anything but that. Mm. Tan woolly sculpin and a 4 and a 2 done. And it'll sink plenty. You don't have to be that deep. I was listening to Alex and Chad Johnson's, I forgot to look that up too, And I remember Alex and I were fishing one time, and we're in a run, and he got a really nice, like a 2-footer, maybe a little bigger. And how long the fly set up, the fish is, it's a 5-foot deep run. It's bouldery. And the fly hits and the fish is there. It wasn't 6 inches below that fly. And it doesn't really make some giant ass run. It just goes and eats it. They're not sitting down hugging the bottom. Once in when cold water, they'll do it a little bit more, or super hot water. But when it's really super hot water and they're down the bottom, they're not going to eat no matter what. You can throw a night crawler at them. It's not happening. Yeah. And so, but I mean, just like I said, back to it, shorten your cast up, call it 20 max, and that's probably pushing it, 15. Control 5 to 6 feet of your retrieve, and you just keep shifting yourself. Remember, nobody can tell you. We all fish differently, but you're going to get control. And remember, you don't want the fly comes either straight across or slightly head downstream and does this to you. But you're only controlling 6 feet of that cast. And that will probably take your, like you said, I didn't think about it. You probably are casting too far, because that's a really common, like, I've had this mantra for 2 decades. Stalk more, cast less. And it doesn't mean I don't want, you know, but people equate a long cast with somehow making, like they've read their water better or they're better anglers. It's total bullshit. Read your water and shorten your cast up and you'll catch more fish. first and foremost, you aren't going to cross them. There was a really great, I said this in a video a long time ago, which pretty much sums it up, my thing about casting. And it was Joe Brooks with Al Troth and his son. And I don't remember who told me the story, but they were on the big hole. And Al's son, who's a great caster, great fisherman, as are, you know, both of them, and he's showing off is the premise of this, and he wades out, and he casts this lunker cast out a mile, right? And then he fishes it back, and he says to Joe Brooks, what do you think of that? And he goes, well, I think you waded through the first third of the fish, you cast over the second third, and he says, at least you hit the last third, but you wrecked the entire run. Whether it's true or not, I don't know.
Probably.
But anyways, and it was like, you know, start close, fish close, position yourself. 20 feet in Michigan is a long, when you figure there's not many rivers you're talking about that are 40 feet wide, mm-hmm. you're halfway across the river. And you should be able to wade to most of those sections. And I'd much prefer to be out there fishing back and forth or straight up. And so I don't think it won't matter one way or the other. But that short of a cast, sometimes there's a give and a take. You use a floating line, you got to have a longer leader, get a little bit more kick, you're going to have some sort of weight on there. It's going to kick your line. You'll get used to that. Just slow down. When in doubt, slow down with a cast, your back cast.
Hunter's tip, which I love. Hunter's one of our fishing guides, young fishy dude.
Oh.
His tip with his clients is when their casting breaks down,
mm-hmm.
cast in slow motion.
Yeah.
I think about it.
Particularly your back cast.
Yes. I think about it like every day I go fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some casts I make are better than others. And when I'm not throwing it great, it's always what I think to myself. Yeah. It's just slow down.
Almost every bad cast is from rushing, just like in golf, rushing your back cast.
Mm-hmm.
You think there's a tree there. I might have lowered my cast. Oh, shit. And you just take the power out of it. And so that's the long answer to a short question. Fish closer, shorter, and just get control. 6 feet. 6 feet in rivers back there, you're going to cross your bucket. And you're going to be, 10, 15 feet past behind. That's plenty. You're not going to scare your fish away. Not a real one.
Right. Yeah. The one that's going to eat a streamer is not going to be scared by that.
No.
Right.
I mean, shit, we used to float those things and hell, I can't tell you how many fish, you know. Well, did you see that video of Alex and Russ fishing the PM? They were fishing for dropback steelhead.
Yes.
And they're stripping.
Yeah.
How many of those fish ate 4 foot from the boat?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not that uncommon. You think that you got to sneak up on them. And there's a difference between a fish that's set up in like a predatory size and the fish that's set up like eating a dry fly. Well, if you stomp your happy ass into a fish that's sitting there eating on the surface, you'll probably put them down. But you can still get a lot closer than you think you can.
That fish probably wasn't going to eat a streamer anyway.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
But there's a difference, and we kind of equate the two. So,
yeah, I do think that, there's very different approach methods for dry fly versus streamer. Mm-hmm. That's maybe something.
I still think on this river and a lot of rivers, somebody asked me about, we did a podcast about my favorite dry fly eat, and I had just couldn't think of any. I mean, most of them I could think of are steelhead dries. But I do recall one that I just thought was comical because we were eating. It was Bob Linzman and I and Jerry Dennis, and these dipshits in their float tubes come down the river. It's dark. They're drunker than you can. Hard to believe you could get drunker than these guys were. And I'm standing out there and I've got a fish eating and he's about 10 feet from me. This is a heavy 20s fish eating Isonychias. And here come these float tubes. God, are they hammered. And this guy is 10 feet from me, maybe. And this fish just mows. I mean, just hammers an Isonychia. It's a big fish. The guy's like drunk. I should snagged his freaking tube. But it was like, he goes, hey, man, pretty close, don't you think? I'm thinking, what the hell do you think I had on the end of my line that could make a splash? Like, it wasn't me, you dipshit. That fish, had just let three float tubes go by. They were a little bit further, probably 8 feet. This guy, he's 10 feet from me. I could have touched him with the fly rod very easily. Mm-hmm. And that fish just chows this Isonychia. So it's possible that they will still go there. We just kind of try not to get that close to. I could adapt that fish.
Yeah, every fish is different, right? I was...
That was my favorite dry fly eat, so I did get the fish.
Okay, nice.
I didn't land the fish, but I did.
It was, you gotta eat.
It was an incredible eat, because as soon as that jackass goes by me, I just rolled one up and he ate it. I mean, he was ready to eat, right?
Yeah. And if the fish is in a mood like that, like I was up near Crag the other day swinging with a buddy, and it's the worst streamer
day. I'm sure you should say it that way.
It was the worst streamer day I've ever had up there. I went one for one, and I got a fish about 8 hours in, which is nice brown trout. It was fun, but that's a place where they're supposed to eat it better than that. And
some days.
You know, they're eating midges off top, and there were, I don't know, a handful of fish up in this run, and we both swung through it. You know, I'd land my streamer right in front of that fish. 20-30 seconds later, it comes up again.
It's been my experience.
Under my rod tip, you know?
It's been my experience that a trout that sticks his nose up does not eat a streamer. Mm. And there's 10,000 people are going to write in, there's no such thing as never or always. And I can't recall the last time I had an active dry fly. I don't even cast at them anymore. I just don't.
I remember you saying that down in Chile, and that's when I started thinking about it. Yeah. I cast at them. I've never gotten one.
I can't recall.
I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure it's happened.
It everything has happened, you know? You got a date once.
Once, yeah. He was pretty handsome, too.
Yeah. It was just...
My point of that being, though, that those fish let me get within
so
10
close.
Feet of them. And,
who knows how many... Maybe there was another one, right? How many times you been standing out here and look down? Shit, go to the bighorn. I mean, they get pretty hip to us. There's a thing called shuffling, which is very taboo on rivers like the Green and the Horn that have so many freaking fish in them. And shuffling means that you drag your feet on the bottom and you dislodge it. I was fishing on the bighorn with Jerry one day, Wilson. And Jerry, I think it was Jerry's first trip there. And I'm standing there, and I'm changing the fly. I'm sitting there like this, and Jerry's got another fish on. And he's, I don't know, 20 feet below me. And he's just like putting a clinic on these fish. And I'm not really thinking of it because there's a lot of fish there. But he's getting one every cast. And all of a sudden, I look down, and I'm like, and he's 15 feet closer to shore than I am. But it's a straight line, right? And I look down, and he's straight in my chum line. I mean, I said, hey, which really taboo. Yeah. I mean, really bad. That's just something you don't do. And if you're proficient at cheating, that's how you do it. Or you have your client below you 10, 15 feet back, you throw into, and you're standing up there. Well, I'm like, I sit here. I never sit still. I just fidget. I'm doing the same thing when I'm standing there and I'm looking around. I'm tying my nets and blah, 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 shuffling my feet. And I said, hey, you're in my chum line. He said, the hell are you talking about? He never heard of it. He hadn't been there. And I go, you're in my slick. And he goes, you're so full of shit. I go, I have my rod in my hand, just tied on my fly. I have fish literally bumping my legs in the thing. And I went like this. Thump, and I go, look at your feet. And he goes, holy shit, they're all over me. You know, and it's because they're used to you, right? You're helping them feed. And so we just have
thing. They've adapted, right?
They've
it's like
adapted.
Pigeons in cities. Yeah. Right? It's the same thing.
And that's not common everywhere, but it is, they are a lot more, they're much more stable. They're used to people. And I don't care where you are. Some of my biggest fish in Michigan came out of rivers that are like he's talking about, that didn't get a lot of pressure. And I was fishing, a guy who was my neighbor's name was Ford Robinson, giant guy, great spinner fisherman. And Ford took me to the upper Manistee way, way up. And he's fishing a number two MEPS, which is one of the most deadly things on earth. But we're in tiny. We're up by Mansalona. We're way up. This river's gotten tiny, right? And beaver dams everywhere and stuff like that. And I've watched him drop two 20s out of this one run, and I don't think he cast 10 feet on either of them. And I went, he's throwing a spinner. Plop, down goes the spinner, right? And he's walking upstream. And then on the river that I lived on next door to him, he took me down there one day and we were going to go up and fish. And it's really just trees everywhere and shitty. And again, he just puts on a clinic with this spinner. And most of the fish ate 6 feet from him. Yeah. Well, they didn't, they're there. He just wasn't, and he's 6 foot six probably. Giant human, right? It's not like they can't see him. And so it just kind of, once you get used to it, it's kind of like figure eight in a muskie or a trout. You can figure eight trout too. I mean, they're there. It's not like they don't. If they had a really huge brain, we would never catch one. I mean, they're just being critters, right?
It's one of my favorite quotes of yours is the, we tend to give fish a lot of credit when we can't catch them.
Yes. When we can, we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking idiot.
So yeah, that's the long, long answer.
Talk about idiots. Chuck and I were up between the lakes early last fall before any fish had started spawning. And then we're swinging Jacqueline's hole looking for brown trout, you know, that are early pushers. And we realized that there were 20 rainbows eating bugs below our feet.
Yeah.
And I'm just standing next to Chuck as he's fishing, right? Down like, oh my God, and nobody was eating a swung bug that day. We were blanked.
Yeah.
So we stood there just totally enamored by these fish. And Chuck is, you know, has basically just the leader out of the end of his rod, slapping his streamer down and trying to get one to chase it away from us. We might have done that for a half hour. We're just locked in. All of a sudden we look up and we're like, oh God, I hope nobody saw this. This is an embarrassing.
Ice fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, got one.
I confess that when I first started fishing the bighorn and we realized what was happening, I couldn't help but doing that ice fish thing. I just did it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just wait till one was right there and I would literally hold my rod like this and dip. It just amazed me that they would do it, right? I didn't really care. I'm letting them go anyway, so who gives it? But I would like, I'd never seen anything like this in my life. I mean, looking down, and it, half the time I would just be like this, pull it away. It's something when you get, if you've never seen it, it's like, holy shit, this is something.
So that, you know, that picture I sent you the other day of the squawfish, the northern pike minnow, that's how I caught that fish. I used to have one of those little like Toy Story fully enclosed reels, like the kids' reels, you know, the rods are like that long. And I was just
hanging. Space spinning reel.
Yeah, that, thank you. Toy Story rod. I was
Trillium carbonic alloy, and I can fly. Can't fly. Can't fly. All right, little Mr. Light Snack, prove it. Okay, I will. Verbatim Toy Story.
Oh, there we go.
20,000 times I've seen it.
I don't even know my own.
Yes, there you go.
References. But yeah, I was just hand lining that fish, and then I remember I thought it was a bass. I didn't know any better. I was like 10. I don't think I'd ever caught a bass.
It kind of looked like one.
Yeah,
you got a bassy mouth.
They do. Yeah, they've got a little, you know, smally mouth and kind of similar coloring to a large mouth.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
Shaped like a walleye.
I'm sure that fish died. We put it in a bucket for like 25 minutes in the hot sun. Yeah, whatever. It's fun. Maybe that's why I fish now. I was hooked by that, but I don't know where I was going with that hand line.
Why is this out here?
Because we're talking about floating lines. Yeah. Kelly's lines are coming out soon with Cortland.
Oh, yeah. My Cortland lines, I okayed the sinking lines. The floating lines were perfect.
That's what I've been throwing is one of the demos they sent him, and I dig it. It turns over bugs better than I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because I don't know why. I guess we never really filmed it that much in the old days, but we've always fished the floating, and some of the first, I can't remember what the first, might have been the indicator was the first, the nymph indicator line was the first one I did with SA. But basically, I just I've never not had a floating line in a boat with me ever, because I really like to fish light flies, especially shallows. I really dig it with nothing, just a zoo cougars or anything like that. I mean, you get in that shallow water and barely under the surface, it's a blast. But a lot of people don't understand, this isn't my line. Mine's very close to this one. But I'm doing 1, 2, 3, 6, 7 lines right now, streamer lines specific with Cortland, and we're redoing. We just got the second or third iteration of this line, of the lines, and I beefed up the running lines just slightly, because that was, it's a problem child. You know, the lines get skinny and they get twisted around stuff, and people are always giving them a hook on the seats or pulling them off of tree branches or whatever. And that was a vulnerable point. So I beefed that up a little bit, and it gives me a little bit more grippy if I get back that far. But they were great. And then the floating line. So I think you have first edition. I think the ones I gave you were the first ones off the press, and absolutely could not see. I couldn't think of a change. Just they were perfect.
And I had no coiling in the back of it whatsoever. I was making long casts in Silver Creek. Yesterday I was making very short casts, and it worked great for
there
both.
Shouldn't be any. I mean, we've been testing them. We wanted to be filming outside for the last 3 weeks, and it's just been, man, gruesome out there. It's not too bad today. It's 30, I think, and only about a 15 mile an hour wind, which means I'm not fishing, period. Water temp. Diminishing returns. There's just, it's not worth the ice, the frostbite. But I did test, Richie Strollis did a bunch of testing on them for me. And here I've done a little bit out on snow, actually. I didn't even go in the river. I was out in the snow. Figure if they're going to coil, they're going to coil in the snow.
Right.
I mean, that's colder than the water. So, none, didn't have any problem. But you know, you have to be really careful when you can't just go for coiling, because most of us are going to fish at 70, 80 degrees. And now you got deck and warming, and you got to see that. So got a day. I did float the day that you screwed me on the, where'd you go? You had to go in a.
I had to go to Sun Valley.
Oh, yeah. You had to go to Sun Valley. Get your ass kicked down there. At 73 degree, warmest day of the season. I mean, I baked out there. No wind at 73. I think it was hotter than that. And so I just left the lines in the deck. I sat right in one spot, ate lunch, left my lines right on. And it was, you know, how it, you can actually feel that it's hot on the deck. Of the, and I have black
some
carpet.
Kind of warming or something.
Yeah. And so I wondered, you know, because then they can get, people talk about some lines get gooey, kind of just, they're soft. They stick almost to the deck. So I wasn't obviously not warm enough to figure that out, but they were great. So basically, I don't know when, we still haven't got names for them. That's one of our problems. We still can't think of a name for the lines. We've got a bunch of them. I've sent all of them to Cortland, and we got to have a fun name. Last week we were talking about that with flies, 2 weeks ago, I don't know. And it's got to be right on the edge. You can't be too...
Can't be too obvious. No, there was a couple that were really, really obvious.
Again, yeah, too far out there. But at any rate, on these floating lines, you know, that was my biggest, when I first started designing lines, my first line I ever designed was with Cortland through Jim Teeny. And that was just basically a level sinking line. Then I don't remember it had much taper to it at all. I mean, tip tied ends. And then I went with SA, and my biggest, but it was a long time, and it had nothing to do with streamers actually, because we had the sinking line. What it had to do with is we had just come into, nymphing had taken the next step into indicators and waiting, you know, having lead on your split shot. And our lines wouldn't turn over a two-fly rig with an indicator. And I kept beating them up on this. The problem with manufacturers, mostly, is they don't have to sell their shit. They just make it, you pay for it, they get paid, now you got to sell it. Mm-hmm. And they don't, they've never, you have to have a story. And I kept going to these guys saying, we need a line for, I actually started it in, I cut my own up in Michigan for steelhead because we were nymphing so much and we're running yarn indicators and you're going through here and it's like, I need a line. And they would just tell me, well, just use this. Spoken like somebody's not retailing. I mean, well, how hard is it to make the damn line? It's not hard at all. But I just kept getting, bashing my head against this thing until finally I got SA to do that. And that line just went sail. Everybody was, but we could have done it 10 years before that when we first started asking. And so I showed them, I went to a triangle taper wolf line, pike line for my indicators. And it says, there, I don't use your shit now. But then I went to work for him. But anyway, then, you know, through all the decades. And so I went back with Cortland, the original line company I was with. And it, what's really been cool is that the kid, Brooks, the kid that does the, he's one of us. And no, he speaks the speak, you know.
He gets it, yeah.
Oh, and he starts talking about, well, you ever thought about this? I'm like, ooh, who's this guy? So, and it's, and he's done a lot of them on his own. And he said, well, I found this or that. And it's been pretty cool. So anyway, the lines are done. They'll be out, I don't know, a month or so, maybe a little longer. And then, but the floating lines, they're all going to come out as one big release. And so, that I don't know what we were talking about this, but I don't think you've ever seen me in a fishing show where I don't have a streamer, a floating line set up. I've always got one set up in there.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, and the difference between bastardizing a line or just going one or two over, you have to understand that most floating lines, and that's what I ran into when I was just trying to design with Scientific Anglers in the beginning. The guy that was designing them all, Bruce, with Big Dry, he's one of the best casters in the world. I mean, definitely top 10 in the world. And he, everything they did was for dry fly. Their thought process was dry fly, dry fly, dry fly. And it just, and that was when I'd hear, just try this or just use this. I said, I need a line specific to what we do because we like toys that what we, you could use one motorcycle for everything, but we got thousands of them, right? You can use, you know, nine clubs for everything, but we got thousands of them because we like to have things. Today's angler isn't the just use this angler. They are, no, I'm going to be fishing 2.5 foot of water, this speed and this, and I want the line that makes that easy.
3 to 6 inch flies.
Yes, and and I want that line. And so that's what these are. The streamer float is for the person who's going to be running that 3 to 5 inch fly and have reduced the tapers up front so that they turn that fly over. Because that's what we were saying about, was it Adrian? What?
Aiden.
What Aiden asked originally in the question is that, you know, should he go from a sinking to a floating? Well, if he just went to a heavier floating line, still had that long tip tie for reduction of energy, it's going to be hell, right? Yep. These lines, the reduction of energy, I'm saying, is that when you start tapering a fly line down, the idea is the belly of the line carries the cast, but then you don't want it to go flop like that with a dry fly. You want it to start, so you start making it skinnier, it loses its energy, and it just kind of turns over. Well, we don't want that with a streamer. We want the thing to go whop. And so it took a long time to get people to understand that, but now they do. And so it's easier for us to design a line that does specifics, right? Mm-hmm. I've done it in the saltwater for a long time. I don't know why they fought it in the freshwater, because Flip's had, and Billy Pate and Flip and Lefty had all had saltwater stuff. And those are stupid fish. I mean, Those are tiny fly. I never understood you could put all that emphasis in to a fly that's that long, but couldn't figure out when you go to a fly that long, you have to change the physics of this thing. And it's just like, but it's not like that anymore. So anyway, these lines are specific to, in particular, if like, you've heard me talk about it a lot. In the show that we did we have the lines in? I don't think we did. The show we did last year where we Carolina rigged, which I do a lot of. I really like that. When I'm by myself, I do that a lot. And so it's just weight, above a swivel when light flies. But generally when I'm throwing a floating line, I'm not so much in the articulated world. I'm more into the particularly like Conehead Woolly Sculpins. And I use a lot of those, a lot of peanut envies, regular original peanuts and stuff like that. That one's right on the edge of too heavy for most floating lines. Mm. And so, and there is a point where it becomes, it's a labor throwing after a really big fly. 7-inch fly is going to it's going to work anyone. I mean,
I was throwing flathead kitties the other day and it feels like that's a big enough fly that the physics of the line start to break down, right? Where it doesn't quite have the weight. You know, you get that big kick at the back of your cast.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel right. But that, slick Willie is great on it.
I think MVs. You'd almost, on a fat head like that, I think you'd almost have to, I'm down to virtually no tip tie, but you'd have to run into the 9 or 10 weights. It's no different than anything else. When you fish lures on conventional tackle, there's rods and lines. Everything has to fit itself.
Maybe we should do an episode at some point about, how to pick rods and lines and stuff. But I think essentially you have to reverse engineer it from the fly you want to throw.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why people throw 4 weights with little dry flies. And it's why we throw 7, 8. I mean, I know Russ throws a lot of 9 weights.
Alex and Russ, they run 9s and 10s on the white.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that to save my life. I mean, it's hell on you. But I was talking to Dugan one time at Dally's. I'm pretty sure he said he ran 11. 11's tarpon rod.
It's a tarpon rod.
Oh, my God. How do you cast that? How do you bend it, to make it flex?
With a 500 grain head.
Yeah.
550 or something.
I never ran 11s on muskies.
I was throwing one down in Cuba in the spring for tarpon and everything else. And we had some SA essentially dredge line. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what they call it, depth finder or something.
Mm-hmm. One of them.
Well, when it's properly paired, the thing bends like a dream.
Yeah.
But
imagine casting. That's what the saltwater. I remember getting in this pissing match with a guy one time, Dan Blanton, about how. He's saltwater.
He said his name with so much disdain.
Well, it was just an arrogant thing. I says, I cast every 11 seconds. You stand on the deck with a fly in your hand.
Right. And yeah, I mean, the best saltwater day ever, what do you make, 8 casts,
You got a target.
Yeah.
Try doing that every 11 seconds with 11 weight, and you're going down a river, and you're trying to hit, hit every 30 feet or so. At the end of the day, you'll know I can't run 8 weights all day. No. I run an 8 weight all day and my elbows are just like lit up at the end of that day and it's done. But that was the difference. I was trying to explain to him. I said, no, you guys don't cast like we do. We cast just as long as you do. So, you cast longer, but you do it about every 10 minutes. And I do it every 11 seconds. Right. Yeah, that's average retrieve, pickup, roll, and delivery is 11 seconds between them.
So if you're casting, on average 6 times a second, or 6 times a minute, mm-hmm. and you're going fishing for 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
That's a lot of casts.
Do the math, yeah. So
that's why I always hammer with everyone is not letting your elbow creep up away from your body. I mean, if you're going to be casting that much, keeping things where they're supposed to be helps our shoulders a lot.
Yeah, relax.
For longevity.
And you don't have to hit all the water. That's it. I watch, especially newbies, they don't ever seem to want to break. It's like, that flat's not really holding any fish, I got 3 casts through it. That's great. It was 3 inches of water. Your fish would be sticking out of it if it was there.
All right, well, that was talking salt water.
I don't know. Didn't start there.
No, it didn't. Never does. So why don't we jump in? What are you pissed off about today?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
Not much. I'm having a pretty good day today.
It's the first time he's ever said that.
Well, I haven't been here long. Let's see. I'm pissed off that I can't fish outside, you know, can't go. That's about it. Let me think about it. I didn't have, you know, I'm trying to be a jolly old fellow and not be that grumpy old bastard. So I'm still pissed off about the thing I talked about. The, what do you call it? The, what are those things when they post on Facebook and when they do their political ad things? Meme? They're not memes because they're, they make ads. Who cares? Nobody, you're not changing anybody. Just stop with the shit so I don't have to read it and get pissed off. I've been.
Have you seen the Shane Gillis? He does a stand up bit about.
Who?
Shane Gillis, big stand up comedian. I got to send this one to you. It's so good. He talks about how you want to have a Fox News dad. The Fox News dad's better than an MSNBC dad. But the part that made me think of that is, he's like, his dad watches Fox News every night until he's so mad he has to go to sleep.
That's like, gotta be great for
fucking trying to do what? I can just picture you watching Fox News until you get so mad you have to go to bed.
I like Fox News. I like some of them. Some of them I can't. I don't like anything of everybody or anything, but I took a because Johnny's always telling me that I'm. For those of you who don't know, I'm so right, I won't use my left turn signal. And so, but that's not really true. I try to stay down thinking. And so I made a promise. I would not watch any Fox. I didn't watch any news, period, for 1 year. I watched the morning news local. As soon as the national feeds, I'm out, right? And so, but even on the local, there was some. And then to just punish the living, there was a limit. I wouldn't go like, total insanity, CNN or something, but I watched CBS for 1 year just to go completely to the other side to listen. And now I'm just kind of Sweden. I'm down. I don't listen to any of it. I don't give a shit about any of it. That's why it pisses me off when I try to escape it and I go into my Facebook to see all these people that are friends with us, they're fish people, and I see some jackass telling me that, you know, whoever it is going to ruin it. We're such party psychos now. Nobody wants to listen to just, what about just tell me the truth? Oh, we don't need that anymore? Okay, cool. I'll go fishing. That's why I don't want to see it on my freaking Facebook or my Instagram.
That's why we're not going to talk about politics.
Exactly.
So
I did, I've told you a story. I got pulled over once for making a shitty stop up here at the corner.
Yeah, 191.
Going into Big Sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. I made a semi-rolling stop. The cop's sitting right there. I don't know what I was thinking. I didn't think it was that bad. But I didn't turn my blinker on either. And he pulled me over. She didn't have to do anything. He reached out his window. Like, pulled me over and I stood there and he comes up and he says, that was the shittiest excuse for a stop I've ever seen in my life. I says, no way, I've done a lot worse. And he goes, you didn't turn your signal on. I said, sorry, man, it's a left turn. I don't do anything to the left. He just looks at me and she says, leave now, go. Yeah, I was having fun. I wasn't
going to
go.
He was about to get stuck for an hour.
Hey, hear about what Pelosi did or whatever.
I think we put that podcast out either today or before, but where we were talking about, you know, people not stopping you on the side to talk. You
know, yeah.
Well, guess what? If you stop me to talk, guess who's going to be talking?
Me. I like talking to the cops.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
But I'm really not that. I don't know. I started the CSP party, the Common Sense Party, 20 years ago. It's sole member still.
Yeah. It's just the uniform for that party, a public landowner t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. You haven't worn one in a while.
I had one on yesterday.
Oh.
I'm wearing them out. I kind of lost track of those guys because when it first started, I was a big part, you know, doing a lot of stuff. And then new people and a couple of them left. And I just kind of, you know, I'd always get T-shirts when I go speak or do something for them. And it was, yeah, I love it. Public landowners, what it's called.
Speaking of T-shirts, there's a comment from Maine Trout Whisperer. They said, now that's a good T-shirt quote. I've snagged a beaver at night unintentionally.
Yes,
that was a good one. So thanks, Maine Trout Whisperer. If you want to make the T-shirt, we'll sell it.
I might sell that one anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty good. There's, yeah, a couple good
Some ones. Of those old t-shirts were pretty, they were pretty on the edge.
What was the one, put my junk in your box?
Yeah. Gallup Flies, put my junk in your box.
Yeah. Number one, stickers of those still.
Number one seller was t-shirts with Stu Chicks, every one of them. And then I guess it makes more sense, but, and then the one that I stole from, I don't know, everybody says they did it, but there was Paul Deering, back in Michigan on Union and 8th Street, I think it was, not 8th, Union and, what was it? Might have been 8th. Had this little meat market, and he had a sign out on the road, out on the highway, on the 75, said, and he did a lot of processing of deer and stuff, mm-hmm. and because all the hunting up there, and this was back in the 70s, and it said, Deering Meat Market, you can't beat my meat. And so we have that one. I've got that one, t-shirt too that says, Gallup Flies, you can't beat my meat. Meat is an acronym for fly.
Yes.
I remember when my dad, I think I did this on a show once when I was talking about this, but my dad, I remember, who is kind of a degenerate like me, and he said that, I remember it was at dinner and he saw that on the highway. He goes, that son of a bitch is going to go to jail. You can't say that kind of thing. And he's got his giant billboard. He's got a picture of him, Paul Deering, can't beat my meat.
Turns out free speech isn't always a good thing. Why don't we grab something from behind the desk to talk about briefly?
We're doing that thing?
Yeah, special fly. You can talk about the fish, one of the posters back there. Whitefish lives matter. Lives? You ever notice it's whitefish lives matter, not lives? That one's lives. This one's the sticker.
For those of you who don't know, these predate the whole BLM thing. So I was getting shit about it. I'm not canceling my ass because somebody else does something stupid. I don't give a shit. This is like, this guy wrote a book on whitefish. It's Whitefish Ed. There's his hat up there. The guy is a professor at Boise or something.
Freshwater bonefish forever is what that hat says.
Yes. And he was a genius. The guy, he's a very smart man. He wrote books about a book about how important whitefish were. Because these dumbasses around they're always throwing them in the bushes, right? And saying that they're like, we know better than nature, right? And so they're just eating all our trout's food. You're a dumbass. But they eat the shit out of juvenile whitefish. That is huge
trout food.
That is trout food there. So I don't know. Pick one thing. What did I do last time with the hula girls?
Yeah.
That's just a mod. This was one of my first fly boxes.
Yeah, pull that thing
ever. And it had some of my flies in it that I tied as a child. Oh, there's a better one than that. My first marabou muddler. Way back in
What's the
day.
Outside of the box look like?
Just a preen box. Got to tell you how to tie a knot.
That's cool. I could use that. About half of our fishing guides could use that.
Holding on that. I think we've shown this before. Ooh, my marabou muddler, too big for its box. Look at that. We'll get into this one here. I don't know. There's a lot of shit here. I think I'll have to do it later. But inside this box, I built that box for my grandfather. A lot of shit on it.
Yeah, we can get into that one.
This is pretty cool. I lost this box. My cousin Brian, who's a very famous guy in the music world, runs one of the biggest luthier schools in the country. But I built this. My mother was a really good woodworker. My dad sucked. My dad used to think you set screws instead of pre-drilling, setting. He'd just get to the end and poof, hit it with a hammer. Like, what a moron, right? But my mom wanted to teach me how, when I was 10 years old, how to design, like you do in woodshop. You learn how to do your drop sheet, right? How to save the most. And so we had this little sheets of balsa wood is all it was. And I screwed it up, but I'm 10 and she let me do it on my own, right? She told me, well, if you do that, you know. And so I cut my materials out. As you can see, this one's full, this one's not. So I had to paste in a little piece here. I was trying to do some fancy stuff. But I built this for my grandfather when I was 10 years old. How I know that is that I lost it. I gave it to him for Christmas. And I lost it because my grandpa had it And then he died. My dad, I think, got it, but I don't know. And then my Uncle Dick got all, there's two brothers. So they, it goes over to him. He doesn't fish anything. He just got all grandpa's stuff after my dad died. And so my cousin Brian finds this buck, who's Jacob, who was out here last summer. That's Brian's kid, who came out and fished with us for, spent a month with us. And so anyway, Brian sends me this box, and it says, and it's got the Christmas card in it, but he lost the Christmas card. And he said, can you, he says, he sends it in the thing, and it's the boxes in there. He says, I figured this was yours. Not because I'm the only guy in the family that's a fly fisherman and or any of that kind of stuff. He says, I figured it was yours because it says, Merry Christmas, Grandpa. But it doesn't say a name, but you spelled Christmas wrong. Not that you're a famous fly fishing guy. It's that you're an imbecile. But inside it, I'm very, this, I told Johnny, I said, when I was 10, I had better proportions than you did. But these, it was a Christmas present. Some of the hackles ate off. I don't know what kind of bug got in there and ate that. That's a black quilt. These were single color. I didn't have, did not have grizzly hackle until I was much older. Only hackle I had was brown. Huh. I don't recall when grizzly showed up, but I didn't have it. That's a black quill with an actual quill body, Latorte, Grizzly King streamers, my dad's favorite, and a bucktail coachman. But I don't open it much because I'm afraid it's going to... I did put some lacquer on one of the squirrel tail's bodies, but unscathed, didn't sit there. It's my most treasured possession. But pretty cool.
Yeah.
Figured it was yours. You spelled Christmas wrong.
I love that.
What a genius. But pretty cool.
All right. We're going to do our controversial new segment called Kelly Under Fire, which we're shooting this the same day, so we don't know how it went over. Maybe you guys hated it, but we're going to do it again. We'll do just two, maybe. Fishguy999 comments on Instagram saying, is there any truth to the myth that some of the best fishing happens right before a thunderstorm? Case in point, I fished twice on the Madison right before a storm hit and caught some nice fish.
100% believe it. It's dangerous. My best steelhead day in history. I was talking about that when Russ and Alex did their show. We did 36, Dave and Dave, Dave Brown and Dave, I forgot the other one, last name, Buckovich maybe. We got 36 steelhead that day. I've never had anything close. We got 20 of them in one run, swinging Royal Coachman bucktails on a floating line. And they're coming up and annihilating it. And it's getting pissy yellow. And I'm like, oh my God, here it comes. And it's coming. And you know what it is. You know this is Tornadoville. And it's starting. And we got hit by it. We got thrown out of our boat, slammed us against the thing, crushed everything. My three, four best night fishings ever, preceding a thunderstorm, that steelhead day preceding a tornado and a thunder and lightning, so we can see it hitting 30 feet from us and just blowing shit up. I mean, trees are getting sucked. They're going sideways. They're going like this with their root wads in front of the trees like tailings. And then when it ends, it stopped. And it's the craziest shit. It goes from so loud, you can't even hear. I jumped into the water thinking they can't suck the water out. They got behind up there. We went 25 feet, hit the bank, and launched us all out of the boat. And we just scurried, trying to find some place to get down. An hour before that is the most incredible fishing I've ever seen. Not only that, we're shaking off 16, 18-inch brown trout because we want these steelheads.
Yeah.
And they're coming out. I mean, it's like you're throwing pellets in there for them, right? And so my three best nights ever in history, very life-threatening lightning all over me. Every fish in the ditch is eaten.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm going down, but I'm going down with a 2-footer. It's like, it's going to be something. So I, and out on smallmouth on Lake Michigan, my single best day was right in front of one. I don't suggest you do it because
lightning, we're not liable.
Yeah, lightning's a real zapped. Deal, man. And
it's a real
I was wading upstream with Jerry Wilson, Jerry Dennis, all three of us. I can't remember what river we were on. And lightning hit so close that my guides lit up orange, and we all three of us saw it. I had the rod out in front of me, and how we still don't, it didn't do anything to my line. That's what we can't. Yeah. We swear it made my guides glow. We don't know. Maybe it was just the lightning so close. It was cool as shit. But I mean, I totally believe that that is the best possible hour of your life.
Yeah, I agree.
But you're taking freaking life in your hands over a damn fish.
Risk reward. Yeah. When so I was, remember last year, I think it was a base, like a T-ball coach and a kid got struck by lightning over in Dillon.
Yeah.
Well, me, Jack, and Ryland were out fishing kind of a meadow creek. And, you know, there's a range nearby, so we couldn't see this storm coming on. It might have also eaten some fungi, so we were a little distracted. But just roping fish, black and purple chubbies. And we're trading off as we go and just, I mean, so many great fish. And then all of a sudden, you know, one lightning strike, storm's right on top of us. And it's like a full-on suicide bite.
Craziest thing
I've
ever
seen. Thinking was, if I die in a lightning storm fishing, my mom is going to kill me. So I better go crawl my ass into some bushes.
My best day on this river was guiding John Randolph. And we did the bear trap. Just wasn't guiding him. We're just fishing.
Yeah.
And we went through... We went through the trap, and we came through just above and below Whitehorse. If anybody ever wants to do it, it's the greatest. The Bear Trap Express is J.T. France. If you ever Bear Trap Express, it's the greatest thing that happens out here.
We should go do that.
It's only 25 trips a year, I think. It's expensive. It should be twice as much because it's something. It's unreal. But we went through Whitehorse, and this storm, it's just like what you're talking, but you're in the canyon. You can't see shit, right?
Yep.
And that came in, and fish started doing things. Another weird thing is I could see in the water better, and I don't know why. And fish,
maybe it's no
huge
glare
fish.
Above you.
I have no, it seemed like, it was beautiful.
Oh,
it was sunny, blue sky.
Weird.
I can see him better. Fish are just going crazy. Two, three fish at a time are trying to eat stuff. We get through it. And all of a sudden, we get through the trap and we go down just a little ways. And all of a sudden, I mean, it's every time we cast, we had a fish. And all of a sudden, it's just because you're in this canyon, like straight up, right? All of a sudden, it goes from bluebird to black. I mean, 15 seconds. It's totally black and it's just lightning everywhere. And it's just it's hitting everywhere. I pull over and there's a little cave there in the side of the, you know, the rock slice down here. And it's 10 feet back. I can go in there and have a party. And this is John Randolph. I talked about him a couple of things ago about fishing scuds here. And I lashed the boat. I have a raft. Just smashed ashore. I said, get out of the boat. Get out of the boat. Just leave your shit. I don't care where it goes. And lashed it off as best I could with the anchor around a tree and ran underneath that cave. John stood out in this little tiny field thing and says, no, I learned this in Nam. You stand as high as you can. I swear to you, it's like something you'd have seen in a movie, right? And I'm under there, totally dry, underneath a boulder the mountain. And I mean, I got 8-10 feet of I can stand here, right? And he stood out just like with his arms crossed like this, get as high as you can and just stand out here. I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to watch him just blow.
He's actually trying to die.
Yes. I learned this in Nam. Should have been in the Lebowski. But I totally think that is 100%. Yeah. I wouldn't. I bail out now. I'm not. I don't want to. Mostly, I don't have somebody else get hit. I mean, I don't want to really. I know guys that have got. I know two guys who got hit by lightning. Both lived. Wrecked them a little bit, but both lived.
Zapped them.
My buddy got it in the head, and went in out of him into it. There's bluebird, sunny sky, 3 miles around there in Saugatuck, and hit him in the head and went out his ear, blew his ear off, and threw him and into Carla, his wife. And she had like really Italian chick with all this wavy hair. One part of her hair is straight now. I don't know if it still is. Back then it was. And I think it went through his toe. And they were moored. They were moored and they were lashing their boat up. And they're going to go start drinking at the, you know, big, they got a deli right there, bar. And there's two MTs sitting having lunch, and they saw it hit him.
Jeez.
And they marked him, everything. They hit him on the thing. They had a full wagon with them.
Screwed him up a little?
Yeah, something about...
That's a divine lobotomy.
Yeah, it did. He was never right. Sorry, Jeff.
Maybe it straightened him out.
But, yeah, no, it was not perfect, but he lived. And I fished him a few years after that. He was the funniest guy you ever met in your life. And he wouldn't let him fix his ear. Blew his ear off. And he said they were sizing him up or some shit about fixing. He goes, "Are you shitting me?" He says, "How many people you know that got their head blown off and still alive?" He goes, "That stays just like it is."
Yeah, cool.
I don't know. She might have made him fix it later, but it was pretty gross.
All right, we're at time. So thanks for...
That was a little over 1 minute.
Watching, listening. Yeah. Yeah, we're a little over. I don't know how well this 1 minute thing is going to work. I think we're just going to, you know, work more questions into the show. And
well, they can't. They have to be a direct question, yes or no.
How about this? What's the genus species for wood duck?
Oh, I don't know.
Just make one up. People will believe you.
I already said I don't know. I should know that. You know, when I was doing the taxidermy stuff, and my mentor, if you will, is Kelly Siebels, one of my favorite humans that ever lived in the world.
I say this with the utmost respect. Is this going to be a long one? Do I need to start and stop the cameras again?
No. Okay. It just always, and the other guy, the most famous guy in history is Frank Neumeyer, which is a friend of mine and lived in Michigan also, but they would, all everything was Latin. Yeah. Every bird's name was Latin.
It
and it's like, dude, we'll play this in bugs if you want, but I'm not going to do this with the ducks. It's a freaking, I could barely get through the diver dabbler and all that shit. I said, it's a mallard. Got it? Done. Yeah. Got it. So I don't know.
I like the blue-footed booby. That's the one bird I got.
What is its Latin name? Booby?
Bluis boobus.
Bluis boobus.
All right. Well, with that, thanks for watching. Next time.
Appreciate it. Hope you liked it.